For years, I have truly tried to live in accordance with your teachings, I said. Obviously, I have not done well. How can I do better now? You think and talk too much. You must stop talking to yourself. What do you mean? You talk to yourself too much. You're not unique at that. Every one of us does that. We carry on an internal talk. Think about it. Whenever you are alone, what do? I talk to myself. What do you talk to yourself about? I don't know, anything, I suppose. I'll tell you what we talk to ourselves about. We talk about our world. In fact, we maintain our world with our internal talk. How do we do that? Whenever we finish talking to ourselves, the world is always as it should be. We renew it. We kindle it with life. We uphold it with our internal talk. Not only that, but we also choose our paths as we talk to ourselves. Thus, we repeat the same choices over and over until the day we die, because we keep on repeating the same internal talk over and over until the day we die. The warrior is aware of this and strives to stop his talking. This is the last point you have to know if you want to live like a warrior. How can I stop talking to myself? First of all, you must use your ears to take some of the burden from your eyes. We have been using our eyes to judge the world since the time we were born. We talk to others and to ourselves mainly about what we see. A warrior is aware of that and listens to the world. He listens to the sounds of the world. The world is such and such or so and so only because we tell ourselves that that is the way it is. If we stop telling ourselves that the world is so and so, the world will stop being so and so. The world is incomprehensible. We won't ever understand it. We won't ever unravel its secrets. Thus, we must treat it as it is, a sheer mystery. An average man doesn't do this, though. The world is never a mystery for him, and when he arrives at old age, he is convinced he has nothing more to live for. An old man has not exhausted the world. He has only exhausted what people do. But in his stupid confusion, he believes that the world has no more mysteries for him. What a wretched price to pay for our shields. A warrior is aware of this confusion and learns to treat things properly. The things that people do cannot, under any conditions, be more important than the world. And thus, a warrior treats the world as an endless mystery, and what people do as an endless folly. I began the exercise of listening to the sounds of the world and kept at it for 2 months, as Don Juan had specified. It was excruciating at first to listen and not look, but even more excruciating was not to talk to myself. By the end of the 2 months, I was capable of shutting off my internal dialogue for short periods of time, and I was also capable of paying attention to sounds. I arrived at Don Juan's house at 9 a.m. on November 10th, 1969. We should start that trip right now, he said upon my arrival at his house. I rested for an hour, and then we drove toward the low slopes of the mountains to the east. We left my car in the care of one of his friends who lived in that area while we hiked into the mountains. In the early afternoon, we stopped in a small gully at the bottom of some lush green hills. Behind the hills, toward the east, the high mountains were silhouetted against a cloudy sky. You can think, you can write about what we say or about what you perceive, but nothing about where we are, he said. We rested for a while, and then he took a bundle from inside his shirt. He untied it and showed me his pipe. He filled its bowl with smoking mixture, lighted a match, and kindled a small, dry twig, placed the burning twig inside the bowl, and told me to smoke. When I had finished smoking, he said that we were there so I could find out the kind of game I was supposed to hunt. He carefully repeated 3 or 4 times that the most important aspect of my endeavor was to find some holes. He emphasized the word holes and said that inside them a sorcerer could find all sorts of messages and directions. I wanted to ask what kind of holes they were. Don Juan seemed to have guessed my question and said that they were impossible to describe and were in the realm of seeing. He repeated at various times that I should focus all my attention on listening to sounds and do my best to find the holes between the sounds. I began to listen, and I could distinguish the whistling of birds, the wind rustling the leaves, the buzzing of insects. As I placed my individual attention on those sounds, I could actually make out 4 different types of bird whistlings. I could distinguish the speeds of the wind in terms of slow or fast. I could also hear the different rustlings of 3 types of leaves. The buzzings of insects were dazzling. The wind came high above the trees, and then it dropped into the valley where we were. Upon dropping, it touched the leaves of the tall trees first. They made a peculiar sound, which I fancied to be a sort of rich, raspy, lush sound. I could not count all the whistles of birds or buzzings of insects, yet I was convinced I was listening to each separate sound as it was produced. Together they created a most extraordinary order. I cannot call it any other thing but order. It was an order of sounds that had a pattern. That is, every sound happened in sequence. Then I heard a unique, prolonged wail. It made me shiver. Every other noise ceased for an instant, and the valley was dead still as the reverberations of the wail reached the valley's outer limits. Then the noises began again. I picked up their pattern immediately. After a moment of attentive listening, I thought I understood Don Juan's recommendation to watch for the holes between the sounds. The pattern of noises had spaces in between sounds. I heard again the piercing wail of Don Juan's spirit catcher. It did not jolt me, but the sounds again ceased for an instant, and I perceived such a cessation as a hole, a very large hole. At that precise moment, I shifted my attention from hearing to looking. I was looking at a cluster of low hills with lush green vegetation. The silhouette of the hills was arranged in such a way that from the place where I was looking, there seemed to be a hole on the side of one of the hills. It was a space in between two hills, and through it I could see the deep, dark, gray hue of the mountains in the distance. For a moment I did not know what it was. It was as if the hole I was looking at was the hole in the sound. Then the noises began again, but the visual image of the huge hole remained. A short while later I became even more keenly aware of the pattern of sounds and their order and the arrangement of their pauses. My mind was capable of distinguishing and discriminating among an enormous number of individual sounds. I could actually keep track of all the sounds. Thus each pause between sounds was a definite whole. At a given moment, the pauses became crystallized in my mind and formed a sort of solid grid, a structure. I was not seeing or hearing it. I was feeling it with some unknown part of myself. Don Juan played his string once again. The sound ceased as they had done before, creating a huge hole in the sound structure. This time, however, that big pause blended with the hole in the hills I was looking at. They became superimposed on each other. There was something of a lure about it. It dominated my field of perception, and every single sound pattern which coincided with a feature of the environment was hinged on that hole. I heard once more the eerie wail of Don Juan's spirit catcher. All other sounds stopped. The two large holes seemed to light up, and next I was looking again at the plowed field. The ally was standing there as I had seen him before. The light of the total scene became very clear. I could see him plainly, as if he were 50 yards away. I could not see his face, his hat covered it. Then he began to come toward me, lifting up his head slowly as he walked. I could almost see his face, and that terrified me. I knew I had to stop him without delay. I had a strange surge in my body. I felt an outflow of power. I wanted to move my head to the side to stop the vision, but I could not do it. At that crucial instant, a thought came to my mind. I knew what Don Juan meant when he spoke of the items of a path with heart being the shields. There was something I wanted to do in my life, something very consuming and intriguing, something that filled me with great peace and joy. I knew the ally could not overcome me. I moved my head away without any trouble before I could see his entire face. I began hearing all the other sounds. They suddenly became very loud and shrill, as if they were actually angry with me. They lost their patterns and turned into an amorphous conglomerate of sharp, painful shrieks. Don Juan helped me walk to a very small stream. The pressure in my ears subsided very rapidly, and it took only a few minutes to wash me. Don Juan looked at me, shook his head in approval, and said I had made myself solid in no time at all. He wanted to know all the details of my vision. He said that the holes in the sounds were used by sorcerers to find out specific things. What is important is that you saw the ally. That is your game. I've told you that we were going to hunt for something. You will have to go to him. We arrived in the same valley in the late afternoon of December 15, 1969. Don Juan mentioned repeatedly as we moved through the shrubs that directions or points of orientation were of crucial importance in the endeavor I was going to undertake. You must determine the right direction immediately upon arriving at the top of a hill, Don Juan said. As soon as you are on the top, face that direction. He pointed to the southeast. That is your good direction, and you should always face it, especially when you're in trouble. Remember that. We stopped at the bottom of the hills where I had perceived the hole. He pointed at a specific place where I had to sit down. He sat next to me and in a very quiet voice gave me detailed instructions. He said that as soon as I reached the hilltop, I had to extend my right arm in front of me with the palm of my hand down and my fingers stretched like a fan, except the thumb, which had to be tucked against the palm. The spot over which the palm of your hand feels warm as you sweep your arm is the place where you must sit, and it is also the direction in which you must look, he said. If you are facing the south or the north, you have to make up your mind whether you feel strong enough to stay. If you have doubts about yourself, get up and leave. There's no need to stay if you're not confident. If you decide to stick around, clean an area big enough to build a fire about 5 feet away from your first point. The fire must be in a straight line in the direction you are looking. The area where you build the fire is your second point. Sit on your first point and look at the fire. Sooner or later, the spirit will come and you will see it. If your hand gets warm on any place toward the west, drop everything and run. Run downhill toward the flat area, and no matter what you hear or feel behind you, don't turn around. As soon as you get to the flat area, no matter how frightened you are, don't keep on running. Drop to the ground, take off your jacket, bunch it around your navel, and curl up like a ball, tucking your knees against your stomach. You must also cover your eyes with your hands, and your arms have to remain tight against your thighs. You must stay in that position until morning. If you follow these simple steps, no harm will ever come to you. In case you cannot get to the flat area in time, drop to the ground right where you are. You will have a horrid time there. You will be harassed, but if you keep calm and don't move or look, you'll come out of it without a single scratch. Now, if your hand does not get warm at all, face the east again and run in an easterly direction until you are out of breath. Stop there and repeat the same maneuvers. You must keep on running toward the east, repeating these movements until your hand gets warm. After giving me these instructions, he made me repeat them until I had memorized them. Then we sat in silence for a long time. It was getting dark when Don Juan got up and without a word began climbing the hill. I followed him. At the top of the hill, I performed all the movements he had prescribed. Don Juan stood by a short distance away and kept a sharp look on me. I was very careful and deliberately slow. I tried to feel any perceivable change of temperature, but I could not detect whether or not the palm of my hand became warm. By that time it was fairly dark, yet I was still capable of running in an easterly direction without stumbling on the shrubs. I stopped running when I was out of breath, which was not too far from my point of departure. I was extremely tired and tense. My forearms ached, and so did my calves. I repeated there all the required motions and again had the same negative results. I ran in the dark two more times, and then while I was sweeping my arm for the third time, my hand became warm over a point toward the east. It was such a definite change of temperature that it startled me. I sat down and waited for Don Juan. I told him I had detected a change in temperature in my hand. He told me to proceed, and I picked all the dry brush I could find and started a fire. He sat to my left, a couple of feet away. The fire drew strange dancing silhouettes. At times, the flames became iridescent. They grew bluish and then brilliantly white. I explained that unusual play of colors by assuming that it was produced by some chemical property of the specific dry twigs and branches I had collected. Another very unusual feature of the fire was the sparks. The new twigs I kept adding created extremely big sparks. I thought they were like tennis balls that seemed to explode in midair. At a moment when I was about to lean over and pick up a twig, something like a moth or a spot in my retina swept across from right to left between myself and the fire. I immediately recoiled. I looked at Don Juan, and he signaled me with a movement of his chin to look back at the flames. A moment later, the same shadow swept across in the opposite direction. Don Juan got up hurriedly and began piling loose dirt on top of the burning twigs until he had completely extinguished the flames. He executed the maneuver of putting out the fire with tremendous speed. By the time I moved to help him, he had finished. He stomped on the dirt on top of the smoldering twigs, and then he nearly dragged me downhill and out of the valley. He walked very fast, without turning his head back, and did not allow me to talk at all.